Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the next two decades, 400 million acres of U.S. farmland will change hands. Will that land be consolidated into larger holdings and treated as a commodity or investment asset? Or will it prove the foundation for a new business, a next-generation farmer, or a passionate entrepreneur? Those are some of the questions that will be tackled at this weekend's two-day event called Our Land, a symposium on farmland and the future of agriculture. It's being held at UC Berkeley. Event organizers say, as a nation, we face a landmark decision. We can lose our land to commodification, toxic monoculture and corporate concentration, or we can move this land into sustainable regional food production with more farmers, more owners, and more regional resilience. We are losing more than an acre of farmland per minute in the United States. So what impact is that having on our food system and our agriculture as a livelihood? Joining us to talk about these questions and possible solutions are three of the panelists who will be speaking at this weekend's event. Doria Robinson is Executive Director of Urban Tilth. That's an organization that cultivates agriculture in West Contra Costa County to help the community build a more sustainable, healthy, and just food system. They hire and train residents to work with schools, organizations, government agencies, and individuals to develop the capacity to produce 5% of their own food supply. And Doria joins me here in studio. Hi, Doria. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. We're also joined by Elizabeth Henderson, a farm worker or farmer at Peacework Farm in Wayne County, New York. Peacework is a 300-member CSA farm now in its 24th year. Elizabeth is also founding member of the Northeast Organic Farming Association in Massachusetts, and she chairs the Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board in Wayne County. Elizabeth is co-author of The Real Dirt, Farmers Tell About Organic and Low Input Practices in the Northeast. And she joins us from New York. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Hi. For me, it's good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And we're also joined by Anuradha Mittal. She is founder and executive director of the Oakland Institute, an independent policy think tank focusing on social, economic, and environmental issues. She's authored and edited many books and reports, including Misinvestment in Agriculture, The Role of the International Finance Corporation in the Global Land Grab, and The Great Land Grab, Rush for World's Farmland Threatens Food Security for the Poor. And Anuradha joins us from Oakland. Hi, Anuradha. Welcome back to the show.
A pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you. So, Doria, I want to start off with you. It's really hard to wrap your head around the fact that we are losing more than an acre of farmland per minute in the United States. Can you put that into context for us? What does this mean exactly, and why is this happening?
Well, I think that maybe a couple of our other guests would be able to speak better to why it's happening. But I wanted to really speak to what it means for us, especially coming from an urban context. It means that we really need to understand better what's happening with our food. Who is creating it? How does it get to our supermarkets? How does it get to our tables? And what our choices really mean for the future of food.
Do you think that people understand what's happening with food? We were just talking earlier about how we believe we always talk about how this is the mecca of farmers markets and the local food movement. But the fact is, most people really don't know what's happening with
exactly.
their food.
The fact is that the large majority of people living in cities have no idea where their food comes from. We see it all the time in our programs in schools, in the Richmond High School, where kids have no idea like what it looks like to grow broccoli. They still think that farms in America are one farmer, one wife growing, you know, food with cows and, you know, chickens and, you know, multiple crops. And you know, you ask them how big is a farm and they're like, you know, three city blocks. And they think that that's really where our food is coming from today. And it's not. I think that in general, urban dwellers have really no idea of what's happening with food.
Elizabeth, you're a farmer. Help us make sense of this stat that we're losing more than an acre of farmland per minute in the United States.
Well, I think it's, you know, for a lack of planning and thinking about where things are going in this country and in the world. In an area like the one I live in upstate New York, we have a great deal of really high-quality farmland, and we have an adequate supply of water. this part of the world has been losing population, so our farmland shouldn't be eaten up in the same way. And yet the city of Rochester, which has a smaller and smaller population, has a bigger and bigger footprint as the suburbs sprawl out into farmland. It doesn't make any sense at all.
And Honorata, why is this happening? Why are we losing so much farmland in the United States?
Well, Rose, I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's not just what's happening in the U.S., but there are all kind of incredible pressures on arable land. I mean, you have climate change, you have urbanization, you have pollution-induced land degradation. And so all of these factors are at work. And at the same time, in the U.S. specifically, we are seeing the support for biofuel production. So this amazing land that, you know, Elizabeth just referred to, I mean, for people who are investing in it, they might see rather than land which feeds their families or communities, has multifunctionality role to play, could certainly be a place growing biofuels so we can kind of meet the mandates. At the same time, we are seeing, you know, choices being made between food security and energy security. So this is resulting in renewable energy generation, flat open terrain, which is very ideal for wind turbines, solar panels, and especially in states like California, where you have renewable energy mandates, as well as federal support for renewable energy projects. So you see in form of tax credits and loan guarantees. So you're seeing agricultural land suddenly turning into a land full of solar panels. And of course, the one of the big threats we are facing is also one of fracking.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many issues right now that we're concerned about. When it comes to the future of farmland, I mean, what you just mentioned, in addition to the fact that, here's another statistic, over the next two decades, 400 million acres mm-hmm. of U.S. farmland will change hands. Farmers are aging. The New York Times had a really good piece back in January called The Elders of Organic Farming, basically saying that their children are not going to take on the farm because it's so expensive. It's not as lucrative as it used to be. So at this point, Honorata, given these dire statistics and the future that we're really facing, what concerns you the most right now?
Well, you know, it is true that farmers in the U.S. are aging, but one of the things which is not talked about, and thankfully the symposium over the weekend, we really hope that the message will get loud and clear that there's a growing movement for food justice and food security, mm-hmm. and it is leading to creative strategies, that there's a whole generation of young and beginning farmers who are very keen to return to land. What is not talked about is the problem of access. So we don't have a problem of lack of enthusiasm, but we really have a problem of access. The land prices in the U.S. are basically going through the roof, which is making it impossible for the young farmers to be able to access land. And in fact, in a new report that the Institute just put out called Down on the Farm, one of the scariest things that we point to a trend is basically you have now investors, people who have nothing to do with agriculture, pension funds, university endowments, who are looking for investments with solid returns. And in the aftermath of the international financial crisis, farmland is being seen as a safe place to stash capital till more profitable investments emerge. So as of now, nearly $10 billion of institutional dollars are looking for access to U.S. farmland. And if it goes unchecked, most of the land in the U.S. will be owned by private equity, hedge funds, institutional investors, instead of people who care for the land, who know the land, who farm it. And we all know that who owns the land would decide how the land is used or misused.
And when you say that the problem is access, is it because the land is now so expensive? One farmer in the New York Times who's from the North Olympic Peninsula in Washington State said land in his area is going for $26,000 an acre.
That's correct. That is one of the biggest reasons. If you look at the Midwest, you look at California, and again in the report Dawn on the Farm, we profile some of these farmers who are entering into lease contracts. Very often they're not even written contracts. They're totally exploited, but there's no way they can afford the land. And in the absence of policy structures, in the absence of national policies and federal and state policies, which would encourage access to capital, you would find beginning farmers having to lease, having to work on other people's lands. And if the deal does not work out, when they leave, there's no way they can take the love and the effort and the manure and the organic and the building of the topsoil, all the effort that they have put into it.
Elizabeth, what are you hearing from up-and-coming farmers in your area? Again, you're in Wayne County, New York. Are you hearing similar concerns about access? I mean, what does a new farmer, what are they facing right now?
It's extremely hard for a new farmer to get started. Some $6,000 is true for 1 acre. Around here, if you buy 100 acres, you can get it for $3,000 or $4,000 an acre. That's still a daunting amount of money. But that's not all you need to farm. You need a barn, you need equipment, you need access to market, you need a truck. You know, there's a long list of tools and resources that someone needs to get started. And the hardest part is the price that farmers are getting. Even direct sales, organic farmers in very good markets, the prices are not covering the full cost of production or providing people with anything like a middle-class living. Becoming a farmer is like joining a monastery. You take vows of poverty. For at least the first 10 years, a new farmer is not going to be realizing a return on all their investment and an actual living wage for themselves. And unless we change that, all these wonderful young people who are so excited about getting into farming are not going to last. I'm 71, and I saw that happen with people in my generation. The people got started, and then one after another, they dropped out for many different reasons, but a lot of them having to do with economics.
Doria, a lot of people might be kind of surprised by this because we're seeing such a boom in organic food sales, for example. There's such an appetite for it, and it's not cheap. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that because we don't understand what all goes into growing food, you know, most people who are not living in a farming community, we don't value food in a way that we can really understand how to support our farmers properly. We look at the prices of organic food and think, you know, oh, we're paying for, you know, clean practices and whatnot. And we don't think that, you know, there are whole, you know, groups of people who are being supported by that money. And maybe even that money isn't enough. I think that what I really am interested in is having this conversation in urban settings with people. What is the true cost of food? Mm. And how do we embrace the true cost of food while remembering low-income communities and food security and kind of restructure our understanding and our relationship with food so that people don't go hungry, but we can also reprioritize food in our budgets? I think that there needs to be a really deep conversation. And I think that, you know, operations like Urban Tilth are really situated to open those conversations with people. We're right in community. We're from these communities. If we can educate ourselves and then open up a conversation and then work with people in rural settings, work with farmers to help them and really understand what they need, I think that we can kind of plot a way to change, you know.
What have those conversations sounded like? Can you give us some examples?
Well, just, you know, I've been really privileged to start interacting with the Contra Costa Food Alliance, which is an alliance across the county, kind of more urban part of the county and the rural, more rural part of the county, where folks like me get to talk directly with farmers. And just hearing what their concerns are, and it's kind of what, you know, what Elizabeth and other folks have been saying. They're really pressured by sprawl, you know, development for their land. People are being pressured to sell. And then, you know, with sprawl comes other issues, complaints about their farming practice, the smell, and everything like that, and then not having enough money, you know, for their crops, and then climate change, having the weather really change and you know, be a little bit starting to be more and more unpredictable what they're going to be able to actually bring to market, not having market share, not having access to direct sales, not having access to supermarkets, you know, having this really complicated global distribution systems, some of them participate in or not. So it's a complex of things, and it's really actually nice to hear it and to understand it, and then to say, okay, we are only 10 miles away from each other, you know, and we're a lot of eaters and you're a lot of growers, you know, how can we create some solutions here? So we're talking about, you know, kind of urban to rural CSAs. We're talking about creating, you know, cooperative grocery stores within city centers that are, you know, that are supplied by these farmers, you know, as a kind of selling point. And we're talking about, you know, working with other grocery stores, other small liquor stores who are trying to kind of, you know, change these liquor stores into healthy food stores. Connecting them with these farmers as well. So there's more and more places that this food can go and kind of growing directly to the people who need it as well.
And there's a lot of that happening in West Oakland.
Right.
And these issues will be addressed at this weekend's two-day event at UC Berkeley. It's called Our Land, a symposium on farmland and the future of agriculture. You can find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. And our guests today will all be speaking at this weekend's event. Doria Robinson is executive director of Urban Tilth, an organization that cultivates agriculture in West Contra Costa County to help the community build a more just food system. Elizabeth Henderson is a farmer at Peacework Farm in Wayne County, New York. It's a 300-member CSA farm now in its 24th year. And Anuradha Mittal is founder and executive director of the Oakland Institute, an independent policy think tank focusing on social, economic, and environmental issues. And we'd love to hear from you on these issues. The statistics are pretty daunting. Over the next four decades, 400 million farm acres will change hands, and we're losing more than an acre of farmland per minute in the United States. If you're a farmer or you work on a farm, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on these issues? What can we do to save land for agriculture? What's in store for the future of farming? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Talk about the difficulty in accessing land and what we should do about that. And if you live in an urban area, what changes are you seeing in terms of educating people about where their food comes from? 866-798-8255. And if you work in the food justice field, what are your thoughts on these very important issues? What's in store for the future of ensuring that we have enough land to feed our growing population? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Doria, do you want to talk a little bit more about access? What are you hearing from California farmers? I mean, we've got the breadbasket here. We feed most of the population in the country.
Right. I mean, I think for me, what I hear most of is folks dealing with, you know, kind of urban situations and young people in urban settings who want to become farmers. So figuring out kind of creative ways to gain access to land. Specifically, from my experience, looking at collectively held land that's held by government agencies, lands that's held by cities, and working out really, you know, creative arrangements with this really underused land to kind of put that land in reserve now to preserve areas where people can grow food. I know that, you know, on a lot much larger scale, that this conversation is happening, you know, in with farmers that are growing, you know, high amount, you know, lots of amounts of food. But I can't underscore enough that people in urban settings, and most of the people in the country live in urban settings, also need to be directly connected to growing food, even if it's not, you know, providing 100% of their food supply or even 10% of their food supply. Because in order to understand even a slight bit the plight of farmers, they have to understand what it takes to grow something, mm-hmm. all the energy that goes into that. So preserving, you know, spots of urban land, you know, in forms of land trusts or creative agreements with, you know, long-term leases for community organizations within city centers, with cities and counties, is a great way to make sure that people stay connected and stay supporters of our farmers, so that when they need our support on a regional or national scale, the people in cities will understand and they'll vote in a way that really supports the farmers.
We have a related question. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, your guest just was addressing, in a way, an issue that I just thought of when listening to the program, and that was there are farmers, people who would like to farm, like to maybe do organic farming, may not have enough money, may not want to be able to stay on the land. There are people in the cities who may have, you know, an interest in that, or may have additional capital or whatever. And I'm wondering if there's not some way that there could be a partnership where, I'll just give you a hypothetical, where, you know, a group of people in a city might get together and be able to come up with a fair amount of money to buy property, to buy farmland, and then work with an organic farmer or farmers to farm that land so that there'd be some kind of partnership between people in the city and people who may not be able to afford to do this, but as a result of this kind of capital, and it might not even be just individuals. There may be nonprofits who might want to do this. So I'm just trying to think of ways where you could purchase farmland and let people work on that farm to produce organic produce.
All right. Well, thank you, Greg.
Let me speak to that.
Sure, Elizabeth.
That in fact, is what my farm has done. It's actually our 26th year, but 14 years ago, we moved to a new piece of land that we leased from another farmer. And after a few years, he passed away, and his widow offered to sell us the land. But instead of my farm partners and I buying the land ourselves, we worked with the Genesee Land Trust and with the members of our CSA. And within 14 months, the members of our CSA contributed enough money to the land trust so that the land trust was able to buy the whole farm, 140 acres, and then lease 109 acres of that land back to us with a 25-year rolling lease. So that has allowed my partners and I to farm without making a big financial investment, and that way we can pass the farm on to younger people without them having to make a big financial investment.
Elizabeth, how common is that model across the country?
Well, there are maybe a dozen that I know of. Mm. It's not very common yet, but I'm hoping that with programs like Our Land, more people will hear about the possibility and more land trusts will get on board with doing things like that.
And Doria, I understand you helped start a farm in Richmond called Roots and Restoration Farm, along with the help of the local government?
Right. So along with the help of Supervisor John Joya's office, we are in the process of developing a very small urban farm. It's 3 acres, so it's nothing compared to the small 100-acre farms that most farmers deal with. But for us, it's a huge deal because we have a long-term lease. It's for community benefit, so the price of the land is pretty much nothing. We're you know, paying, you know, $500 a year. Hmm. And it makes it possible for us to actually, you know, grow in the city and supply to the local community, which is North Richmond, which is highly impacted community in terms of poverty and violence and, you know, very little access to healthy foods with, you know, no grocery stores and no food stores at all. So it's just this amazing opportunity and a really creative, visionary partnership with the county supervisor's office and the county, really helping us figure out what it's going to take and working us through the process of growing this space. So
that is Doria Robinson, Executive Director of Urban Tilth. And today we are talking about farming. Where will the next generation of farmers come from? And how can we ensure that we'll have enough land to feed our growing population? It's your call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call on local public radio KALW. We invite you to join today's conversation if you have a perspective that you haven't already heard in this discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered. Please join our conversation. There's two ways online. You can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or on the phone. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. And then at noon today, This American Life with Ira Glass.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up, tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with journalist and author Barbara Ehrenreich about her new memoir, Living with a Wild God, A Non-Believer's Search for the Truth About Everything. Growing up as an atheist and trained as a scientist, Barbara looks back on her life and a mystical experience she had at a young age, and she explores the existential question, what is the point of our brief existence? That's tomorrow with Barbara Ehrenreich. And then on Friday, we will have a conversation with the filmmakers Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson about their new film, Citizen Coke, a film about money, power, and democracy. This is a new documentary that kicks off on Friday. We'll be talking about the Koch brothers and money that's pouring into political campaigns. That's on Friday. Media coverage of those issues. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the future of farming. Where will the next generation of farmers come from, and how can we ensure that we'll have enough land to feed our growing population? There are a lot of issues involved in the future of farming. There's the question of access. It's really expensive now to buy farmland. A lot of it is being bought by investors. There's the consolidation of farms. And we'd love to hear from you on these issues. If you're a farmer or you work with farms, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? And if you've got personal stories to share about what you've seen over the years, what about retiring farmers? If you're in the next generation of farmers, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have a question from Rob in San Francisco. He says, this is an important issue that I've wondered about for a long time. I've seen extensive development in the Central Valley around all the cities, and that is some of the most productive land in the world. Much of the building boom in China has been on arable land, and with something like less than 10% of China arable, this could lead to major problems there. Is it possible that someday the suburbs will be de-developed to return the land to farming? This is the stuff of science fiction. Anuradha, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I thank you for this question, because I think the trend that we're seeing around the world, whether it is China, where you have rural populations being moved from arable farmland into cities, or if you look at Ethiopia, as we have at the Institute, where, again, traditional, very workable, sustainable economies in Lower Omo or in other places are being destroyed, because there's a whole idea of development, which is, you know, a euphemism for the kind of devastation that we're seeing around the world, especially of farmland and sustainable agricultural practices. The implications of that are huge, because we are forgetting who will feed this world. As of now, if you look at the global picture, 80% of the food is grown by smallholder farmers. And as Doria had pointed out earlier, you know, we are so detached from our food system. You know, we think, I mean, the children in schools believe that, you know, the tomatoes are coming out of a can that you buy in Safeway. Mm. So with this growing detachment from our food system, the kind of consolidation that we are seeing of our food system, with who controls our land, who controls our seed, how food is produced, it will have huge implications for our food security. And we have seen what volatility of market prices, food prices does. In 2007, 2008, when suddenly over 1 billion people were pushed into or were identified as going hungry or food insecure by the FAO. So we are really playing with a future here when we play with lands and we play with food security.
Did you have anything to add to that, Elizabeth?
Well, I really appreciate what Anuradha has said. I think it's important for people to understand that learning how to farm successfully is a craft that takes many years, and it's all the more challenging because, you know, when I started farming 35 years ago, there was a pattern to the weather, and you could get into a kind of a groove of what you did at what time of year, but that pattern is gone. Mm. Every season is different from the season before it. We have wet seasons and totally dry seasons. So you have to have a much bigger bag of tricks of how to deal with what's going on out there in order to successfully produce a crop. So, you know, if people think that the food is going to come magically from out of a can without all this work that goes into making it happen, it's going to be a very hungry world. Mm. And the way it is now in the United States, the people who do the basic work in food production are not making a decent living at it. The average wage for farm workers is something like $13,000 for women and $17,000 for men. No one has figured out the average wage for family-scale organic farmers, but I would be willing to bet that organic farmers are, for the most part, living on maybe $30,000 a year. And some of that, you know, if they have more, it's because someone in the family is working off the farm.
Mm, right.
84% of the farms are supported by someone's off-farm work. So we need to change that in order to keep people in farming and create a sustainable system that will last into the future.
Doria, I mean, these are the kinds of things that really need to be brought to the forefront of people's attention. The plight of farm workers, especially in the community that I come from, where there are a lot of people who are Latinos who are living in our community who come from, you know, farm worker backgrounds. And we have to kind of remember that experience. When we are buying cheap food in the grocery store, we have to remember who's paying for it, you know. Who's really paying for it? And that's really the farm workers. That's really the food workers who are struggling, you know, who actually can't afford to buy some of the produce that they grow for us. You know, we eat every day.
I work on a project called the Agricultural Justice Project, and it's a new label that you will start seeing in the San Francisco area, Food Justice Certified. And what our label means is that the farms or food businesses that are that carry that certification are paying living wages and paying fair prices. So the Swanton Berry Farm and Pie Ranch so far are the first two in California to get that label. And hopefully there will be more. But it's a high bar. But that those two farms can do it shows that it's possible. And the farm has to really concentrate on making that one of their top priorities, though.
The Swanton Berry Farm, what was the other one?
Pie Ranch.
Mm-hmm. And this is
Pescadero.
Okay. And so this label, we just did a show actually about labeling. The label will be Food Justice Certified.
That's right.
When should we expect to start seeing that?
Soon, I hope.
Swanton and Pie have been certified, and I hope you'll be seeing it on their products immediately.
Great. Well, we'll look into that and maybe do a show. And on this issue of farm workers, we talk about this a lot on Your Call, and we recently had Seth Holmes on the show. He wrote a great book, Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies, Migrant Farm Workers in the United States. And he traveled from Mexico to California and worked in the fields with workers and farm workers. And so be sure to check that out in our archives. Quick search for Seth, you'll find the show. So thank you again for the email. And let's go back to calls. Let's hear from Van in San Rafael. Hi, Van. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to understand the rationale of Wall Street buying land at, you know, considerably higher prices. You know, if farm workers can't be squeezed anymore, and if farmers can't afford to lease land and make a go of it, they won't. So, you know, what's the rationale that Wall Street is using to buy the land?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Anuradha, could you hear Van?
Sure, I did. And that's an excellent question, Van. I mean, if farmers are having such a hard time, what is their interest in buying a plan? You know, as one of the farm Wall Street people said, that they equate land to being gold and better than gold because on one hand it appreciates in value, but two, you can also make money through rental incomes and others. And in fact, there was a recent survey that was done of 40 investors, and the majority of them saw capital gains, which is the increase in assets value that is only realized upon resale as a main source of profits from their farm investments. So what I am saying here is that they're really looking at the speculative aspect of land, that they would be buying land and then turn around and sell it to the highest bidder, and the farm prices that we are seeing going up have a lot to do with that, with the kind of money that's coming in to buy the land. Of course, there are all concerns around, well, will this bubble also burst? Yes, it might. I mean, climate change or, you know, if you see a big change in, say, biofuel subsidies and all of that will have an impact on the prices of land going down. But if you have a second, I'll just give a quick example of land speculation. Wexford Capital, which is based in Connecticut, a hedge fund, It bought in 2007 and 2008 and invested nearly $95 million in U.S. farmland. And it was boasting that it would be building the Walmart operation in farming of the world. And in 2012, it basically turned around, liquidated its entire farmland portfolio, and pocketed some $64 million in profits. So that's where the Wall Street is going with farmland.
And Mother Jones recently had a piece called Wall Street Investors Take Aim at Farmland, and it looked at what these companies, corporations do with this land. And it says that you've got grain processors like Archer Daniels, Midland, and Cargill buying crops cheap and then turning them into things like livestock feed, sweetener, cooking oil, and ethanol. So is that common? Is that what the land is used for?
Management. Is those farms are often not managed by farmers, but by managers or management companies who then hire someone else who does the actual farming. So the people who are actually on the land aren't responsible and aren't in charge.
Also what's happening is, on one hand, I mean, that's one of the biggest issues that we are seeing and are really concerned about, that when Wall Street people or hedge funds are buying up lands, they don't farm the land themselves. And as pointed out by Elizabeth, they're outsourcing this farm management. It creates basically a dilute chain of responsibility. So you might see illegal business practices, which poses a huge threat to labor rights, given we talked about farm worker rights. In just one prominent case, Hague, which is Hancock Agricultural Investment Group, they outsourced the management of three apple properties in Washington State, Yakima County, to a company called Farmland Management Services, which then signed another sublease. And in 2012, when over 650 farm workers began a class action lawsuit over, you know, terrible labor violations, it was very clear that the farm management had become very dispersed over multiple operations. Second thing I would also mention, that when we think about California, for instance, which provides anywhere from like almost half of the country's fruits and vegetables, when investors are moving in and buying up land, they will not be growing the same crops. So we have seen instances of, you know, grapes, for instance, being pulled out because they're planning to plant nuts and the kind of commodities that would be desired by the growing East Asian economies, for instance. So that is a huge big threat to food security for America as well. And, of course, not to mention we go into, you know, California facing drought, do nuts take more water. So this is really about, it's not about romanticizing agriculture. This is not about, oh, aren't smallholders nice? This is something which relates to each one of us, whether we live in cities, whether we farm or don't farm. It is time that America wakes up and starts taking a hard look at how farming is happening in this country.
And how is this really, are we seeing tangible changes to our food supply as we're seeing speculators buy farmland and the farmland change hands so quickly?
Well, I think you have seen changes over the past 30 years. Cheap food is cheap. In every sense of the word, the quality has been going down. USDA publishes data on the vitamin content of food, and there has been a steady decline.
Wow.
And part of that is because the food takes longer to get to you. Part of it is the varieties that are chosen not for their nutritional value, but for other qualities like they store better or tomatoes that you can ship green and then gas and turn them orange, when you need to have them on the shelf. And the fact that more and more of the food is being imported. Fruit and vegetables take a lot of labor. So why not just grow them in countries where labor is cheaper? And that's what the free trade agreements are enabling. Every time another free trade agreement is passed, family-scale farmers go out of business in whatever countries are involved.
That is Elizabeth Henderson. She is a farmer at Peacework Farm in Wayne County, New York. It's a 300-member CSA farm now in its 26th year. Elizabeth has been farming for 35 years, and she will be at UC Berkeley this weekend for the two-day event, Our Land, a symposium on farmland and the future of agriculture. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Doria Robinson will also be there, Executive Director of Urban Tilth, an organization that cultivates agriculture in West Contra Costa County. They train and hire residents to work with the community to develop the capacity to produce 5% of their own food supply. And Anuradha Mittal will also be speaking. She's founder and executive director of the Oakland Institute, a independent policy think tank focusing on social, economic, and environmental issues. And we've got a lot of callers on the line. We'll go through a few in just a minute. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What is in store for the future of farming? Where will the next generation of farmers come from? And how can we ensure that we will have enough land to feed our growing population? Let's go to Marie-Louise in San Leandro. Hi, Marie-Louise. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm very excited about this conversation. I live in a part of San Leandro that is barren of any food, you know, real food. There's five or six stores on a strip, but all of them sell alcohol, cigarettes. There is a deli that makes decent sandwiches, but there is no real food. You can't find a head of lettuce or tomato. And, you know, there's a zillion apartment developments all around us and small residential homes. So my dream is to open a produce market where I can sell affordable organic foods to the local community. And everybody scoffs at me, but, you know, it needs to be done. You know, otherwise we have to get into a car and drive into serious traffic either in Castro Valley or San Leandro, East 14th Street. But so I need to know how to get connected. Originally, my plan was to connect with the Women's Initiative Program and help, you know, they can help me get a business program started and to get funding. But they've gone, but, you know, they've gone belly up. They're not happening anymore. I just found out. So how can I get started? Who can I connect with to connect with farmers? And, you know, is there any ideas about how I can get started? I don't have money. You know, I'm on Social Security. But this is my big dream.
So I am so excited to get your call. I think you are not alone. There are people all over the nation who are in the exact same position you're in. And you have some great resources around you, actually. You have one of the most profound urban agriculture groups really close to you. It's Dig Deep Farms. I'd really reach out to them. Hank Herrera, who's been in the food movement forever and is just really a sage, I'd reach out to him and just, you know, see what he has to offer and what his crew. It's really a really dynamic group. There's the Oakland Food Policy Council, and it's San Leandro. You're relatively close. They can, you know, kind of point you more in the direction of resources in Alameda County. And then just kind of, you know, running with those things and taking your time with it, talking to your neighbors and your friends. You're going to need, you know, at least a core group of people who really want to see this happen. So gathering those people together and then just making those connections and seeing where you end up.
And again, it's Dig.
I suggest you contact CAF. Community Allied with Family Farmers. It's an organization of farmers that has a Buy Fresh, Buy Local campaign, and they might be able to connect you with farmers who can supply you.
Great. And Dig Deep Farms, I just found the phone number for you, 510-667-3275, 510-667-3275. You also might want to connect with the Mandela Co-op in Oakland because they did this successfully. It took a while, but they're really successful. So you might, you can get really good stories from them.
And they're actually connected to a whole host of local farmers, you know, small family farms and minority farmers that supply their co-op and,
Yeah, they do great work. So thank you so much, Marie-Louise. Well, thanks for calling, and I hope this works out for you. Let us know how it's going. Let's go next to Eileen in Mountain View. Hi, Eileen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This discussion is breaking my heart. We haven't talked about population increase as well. What I call to say is that not everybody knows that soil isn't dirt. Soil is a living organism. It's full of tiny creatures that make that help things to grow. And if you bulldoze it and plunk a house on it, you've destroyed the tilth of the soil. So even if you plant in your backyard, if you live in the development, you're going to need to put a lot of compost in to make that soil something that will grow vegetables for you. And corporations are formed only to make money. They aren't formed to consider the effect on society as a whole or an individual. So my question would be, how do we affect the corporations, since their goal is only to make money? They're not going to consider whether we need more food. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you. Would anyone like to address that about the health of the soil and what happens when the speculators buy this land? How does it affect the soil?
I'm glad to answer. I would start with the first thing that was pointed out around population. You know, one of the big ag fundamentals is that the growing populations of, as people are getting more economically well off in places like India or China, they're going to need more food. You know, the truth of the matter is just because you have more income, you can't eat more. What you are eating might change. But in case of India, for instance, there are very clear figures that show that despite increase in incomes, if that's happening, you are not finding people suddenly eating meat because of just the cultural and religious aspects of it. So, and if it was just population, we would not have the kind of hunger we have in the United States, you know, like over 500,000 families with children. So we have to look at the political aspect of hunger, what causes hunger, and not just that there's shortage of food production. Having said that, what do we do? Because the corporations, I mean, they are in the business of making profits. And that is why you need regulation. That is why you need Wall Street to be regulated, that when it comes to food, when it comes to the relevance and importance of food to a security, it cannot be left as a commodity that is run by the market. And you need to protect the interest of communities and people and ensure food security of nations.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in. Let's go next. We have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Monica in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Monica.
Hello. Shout out from the suburbs in Central County. And I just wanted to say I certainly am I understand and I support everything the guests have been talking about. I was interested in agricultural issues way back in college. I've supported farmers markets and CSAs over the years. And ironically, because of land prices, I've moved from the city to the East Bay to Central County, where I have a small house on a quarter acre, and we've taken most of the lawn out, and we do vegetable farming, and we've invested in fruit trees and chickens, and I see gleaning movements and all these other ways that people can become more self-sufficient and help support the food issues in the community in terms of food banks and reaching out to those who can't afford the fresh produce that we grow. So I just wanted to add that out that, the suburb sprawl is a problem, but the suburbs that do exist, there can be ways to make it a part of the solution instead of just saying, oh, it's the problem of the suburb.
Well, thank you, because we wanted to end on solutions. Can you all share some more grassroots solutions when we go back to our main question, and that is, you know, developing new farm talent, and then what will it take to really manage land to protect agriculture? Doria?
Right. So I really look to the kind of solution that Elizabeth was talking about in terms of the land trust and CSA members actually helping to enable new farmers to gain access to land. I think that this solution of land trust, you know, holding the best land, the arable land, in trust so that it cannot be developed is an absolute. We have to actually take it out of the realm of investments and speculators. I also see as a solution really looking at, you know, where are our allies in urban centers, you know, the urban agriculture movement. People have to understand that urban ag is it will never grow 100% of the food. And actually, that's not the sole purpose, in my opinion. Our purpose is to reconnect people with food so that they can support the hardworking folks who are out in rural areas who are really doing, you know, the lion's share of this work, and really seeing each other as allies and making sure that we're doing our job in the urban ag sector of educating and reconnecting, and then taking the resources that are within, you know, urban areas and making sure they get back to the people who need them in the rural settings.
Anuradha, final thoughts from you?
Well, you know, while we've talked about some hard stuff, but I do want to give a shout-out to California FarmLink. This is a program which is supporting beginning and socially disadvantaged farmers by helping them secure land and capital, linking them up with farmers who might be planning to leave the land. There's a growing movement of alternative financing where farmers can secure capital, such as Slow Money, Kickstarter, Indiegogo. And lastly, I want to give a big shout-out to Agrarian Trust, which was founded in 2012. It is a national network that is working to spread innovative models of land access, transition, financing to help beginning farmers. They run workshops on how to do lease contracts and learn about topics such as transaction law, alternative community financing. So this movement is growing. There is a long way to go, and I encourage everyone to join this. It is relevant as we talk today in all our lives.
And Elizabeth, we have about 30 seconds.
Well, just a historical note. The Victory Garden movement in the city of Rochester in just a few years got up to producing 20% of the city's food. So urban agriculture can make a significant contribution. And people should know that there is a huge network of organizations like the one I'm on the board of, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, of organic farming grassroots groups in California. There's CAF and there's CCOF, California Certified Organic Farmers. These organizations have been working for 40 years to build the hands-on knowledge of how to do organic food production. And we are providing training and internships for young and old people who want to get into farming.
Elizabeth Henderson, Anuradha Mittal, and Doria Robinson will all be speaking this weekend at Our Land, a symposium on land access at UC Berkeley. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What is the meaning of life? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with journalist and author Barbara Ehrenreich about her new memoir, Living with a Wild God, A Non-Believer's Search for the Truth About Everything. Growing up as an atheist and trained as a scientist, Ehrenreich looks back on her life and a mystical experience she had at a young age. She explores the existential question, what is the point of our brief existence? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.